Good morning, honorable colleagues, members. My apologies for this late start on my part. My doctor's appointment overran a little bit than I had anticipated this morning. My apologies in that regard. I hope Sister Ntombi did convey that to the members. I would like to take this opportunity to welcome you this morning to our hearing into the state of affairs and financials at the UIF. The UIF has appeared before us in 2019, and there was a joint oversight visit to the UIF with the portfolio committee in 2020. And so our interaction this morning is not in a vacuum. We are largely very much aware of the set of circumstances which has characterized the UIF from a financials point of view and a visit. And colleagues will remember, amongst others, we saw the call center and all sorts of other things. So we are speaking from an informed position this morning on these matters. So colleagues, I do not want to waste any more time. It's unlike us, this committee, not to comply. We comply, and the starting time was 9:30, so I apologize for this non-compliance. So colleagues, good morning and welcome to our meeting this morning. Let me welcome the Minister, Deputy Minister DG, and the Acting UIF Commissioner and all the officials. Honorable Lees and Honorable Hadebe, we are in your hands this morning. I will hand over to the Minister to make some brief introductory remarks as per usual. And then Honorable Lees, you'll be first off the bat, and then Honorable Hadebe, you'll tie it home for us, and then members, you will come in at that point. So colleagues, the state of affairs, of course, at the UIF,
recording in progress,
is not pleasing. Qualified audit outcomes, these outcomes, of course, are a regression over the last couple of years. Almost a similar picture, really, with what we saw with the compensation fund last week. But of course, we do know that the commissioner is on suspension, and there's quite a number of acting positions at the UIF. I do also want to, I know that, let me leave that part. So, and of course, the UIF has been the center of attention for all the wrong reasons in the last couple of months, as we've all been trying to grapple with the very grave and realities of COVID-19. So we are dealing with all those issues at once. And so I hope that Honorable Lees and Honorable Hadebe, you'll guide us on this one so that we are pointed and focused on the matters. Right, so let me hand over to the Minister, and then Honorable Lees, you will be first off the bat, and then Honorable Hadebe, you will come in after that, and then members will fill in the gaps. Babungwesi, good morning.
Babu Hadebe, please first.
Are you starting?
No. Please first ascertain if the minister is accepting your apology based on our earlier engagement.
Hey, there's no accepting what here. Don't start problems for us. Disregard what Honorable Hadebe has said. Minister, let's hand over to you. And once again, on a serious note, I do apologize for the delayed start. Minister, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and the members of SCOPA, the Deputy Minister, the DG, the Acting Commissioner, and the officials of the department and the members of the media, ladies and gentlemen. Chairperson, I was seriously warned by Comrade Somio ukuthi endlini yomunye umuntu ihathi indawo ilapha phezulu ayikho la emnyango. So I retract everything I've said. Okay. Chairperson, in our delegation today, we have the Deputy Minister, we have the DG Lamati, we have the Acting UIF Commissioner, and we also have the CFO, Ufezeka Puzi. We also have Judith Kumbi, the Chief Director who's dealing with operations, and the Wotejana who's acting at the Labor Activation Program, and Chris Forey dealing with the investments, and we also have Lebo van Wyk, who's the Chief Director for Corporate Services, was also acting, and a number of, including Chris Dallow, the chairperson of the Audit Committee, and some of the officials. But it bears repeating, chairperson, that engagement where Parliament holds us or holds the executive, the ministers and officials to account are the central pillar of democracy. And as such, we will always take them seriously, or personally, I take them very seriously. As per the custom, the officials will provide the detailed explanation. I will simply attempt to provide an overview from the department and the UIF, and as it relates to the committee's intention to consider the financial statements for 1920 financial year and irregular, fraudulent and wasteful expenditure stated in the annual report. And the fund received a qualified opinion for 2019-20 financial year, which is largely due to the non-submission of the financial statement by the majority of investee companies for audit purposes. And the financial year end of most investee companies is not in sync with that of the fund. And this poses a challenge for auditors because they are unable to conduct a complete audit due to those outstanding financial information. These are social responsibility investment in smaller black or startup companies through the PIC. And similar problems persist at the compensation fund, like you have done your analysis. And the fund has embarked on a process to address these shortcomings. We're going to hear very, in a few minutes, it's an attempt to improve the audit outcomes. In relation to the audit findings on irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I always say I welcome scope of scrutiny. And I would make the point that the UIF is very clear on what needs to be done in this respect, or what has already been taking place, that when cases are reported, an assessment is performed to confirm those cases, if that also meets the definition of the irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Upon confirmation of that, investigation of the matter is conducted so that we can be able to talk consequent management based on facts. While the investigations are carried out, the National Treasurer has also raised concerns about the lack of consequent management, and gave this as a reason for refusing condonation in one matter. Clearly, we have a way to go. In mitigation, I would point to the fact that a cumulative figure for irregular expenditure are moving slowly in the right direction. Perhaps an indication of increased compliance with the SCM procedures. But to repeat, we still have a long way to go. And we must just accept that. And we must not come here and hide facts and hide the situation. We still have a long way to go. And if we want to deal with those issues, we must just acknowledge that there are problems. Once we acknowledge those problems, then we'll be able to deal and or find the solutions. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair. We will listen carefully to the questions and the officials will respond. So you can see I've brought an army today. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Minister. I can only wonder what was said before I came in, but I think against that background of a unconditional retraction, we will be good to go. Honorable, yes, we are in your hands, and then Honorable Hadebe, you will come in after Siyabonga, Minister. Mazamban, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And retraction or no retraction, wish to assure the minister that we do have some seriously dangerous snakes in KZN. In fact, our dog was bitten by Mfezi on Sunday afternoon, and but has survived. However, maybe there's a need for a few snakes within the UIF to kubavusa laba balela khona abayenza umsebenzi wabo. Having introduced that myself in that way, Mr. Chairman, good morning to everyone. I'm also at an unusual venue, and my apologies for my substandard dress this morning. I've already had two meetings, so let's move on then. Mr. Chairman, the Minister has already mentioned the question of investments. The Auditor General could not verify whether these investments actually existed and or were growing or had disappeared. So that was in the last financial year, 2019-2020. We now finished the next. So I'd like to hear, and it's not probably for the minister to give us detail, but what action has taken place over the last 12 months to ensure that as at the end of the 2021 financial year, the Auditor General, which is presumably now busy, who is busy with the audit for that year, will be able to verify those investments.
Maybe the UIF acting commissioner and the CFO, they will come in. But what I need to indicate is that there have been several sessions at the highest level to raise this particular matter with the PIC and even the company's consent and the negative impact these are doing on us. And I don't know what has been the detailed explanation, but not from my side, from the side of the operation, but I know that the acting commissioner and the DG can be able to say, because I'd instructed that we need those interactions and even threatened if we are forced to withdraw investments and blacklist those companies, we will be able to do that. We need proper explanations, but I would want to hear the acting commissioner and the DG on this one. Mike?
Well, in York.
Thank you. Sorry for that, Chairperson. Chair and the honorable members, good morning. On the investment, as the honorable list has indicated, this has been coming on for quite some time now. We have met with the PIC. I personally met with the with the CEO and the TIC team. Because every year we get promised that we will get the full set of financial statements. We'll get to know what is the situation with these companies. Now, what is clear is that on the part of these companies, besides the fact the point raised by Minister earlier on in his opening remarks that there is no alignment between our year end, by our financial year end between us and these entities, and therefore they're unable to provide us with the audited financial statements at the time when we want the audited financial statements. So our agreement with AG was that UIF will do due diligence, check the existence of these companies and those that are able to provide even management account, they should be able to do so. And the status of each of these companies must be well documented. So in the last meeting that we had with PIC, which was on the last Friday, PIC agreed that they will make that information available before the end of the day on Friday, so that at least for this financial year, AG could have a much more better sense of what is the status of each of these entities. But secondly, we also agreed that, in fact, we have met with AG, where we decided that given the fact that the purpose of these entities was, even though we wanted to derive some financial benefit from them, they are largely more on social, more to promote social, to get social benefit from it, to make sure that there's employment. So we may have to reconsider our position in terms of the social responsibility investment, given the status or the state of some of these companies. Some of them are in liquidation, some of them are in the business rescue. The acting commissioner will be able to give a list of those companies that are really, they're really badly. So financially, we're not deriving any value from these unlisted companies that we've invested in. So we are now starting a process of reviewing our position, whether to delist, sorry for that, whether to deinvest, because in terms of accounting, we're finding it very difficult. Because even though you get in some of these companies, they do give you the reports, financial reports, the quality of those reports are so bad to a point that inevitably they will have a negative bearing on your own financial statement once you put it together. So we also, it's not only just about the submission, but also the quality of the financial statement. So I'd like to ask the commissioner to just finish where I've left off, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, DG Chairperson. Thank you. Good morning, members. The in addition to all the meetings that the Director General has spoken about, the UIF board has also had meetings with the board of the PIC, as well as a number of meetings between the investment committee of the UIF and the investment committee of the PIC in an attempt to get the documents and to make them understand clearly what the challenges are. Now, if we look at which companies really, Chair, I don't know if you want me to list the companies that are really problematic at the moment for the UIF with the investments that we have. There are quite a number of them that are in distress and where we fear that the UIF will not get the financials as are expected. So I'll be guided by you, Chairperson, if you want me to name the companies, or can I just extract a few names? Or Mr. Lees, if I can be guided.
Mr. Chairman, I do think that we need a full report on these, and I'm not sure that we can deal with it on this meeting, but if the names, if the list is available and the acting commissioner can submit it to us during the day today, that I think would be sufficient. But have you got some more to say, commissioner, or can I carry?
You can continue. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, to you, to the AG and the acting commissioner, essentially what we're hearing is that the investments are actually not investments. There's a possibility of these being written off. Now, at the end of the 2020 financial year, there were unlisted investments of 5.7 billion rand. Now, the acting commissioners indicated the ones in distress. What is the sort of write-off figure that is anticipated on that 5.7 billion rand?
Jay, if we have to write off all the investments in distress, excuse me, we're going to look at 9 billion rand if we have to write off all of the SRI investments in distress. Not all of them are at the point of liquidation, and there are some of them that we feel we can still extract some value from. But that is the amount that we are looking now. The total SRI portfolio of the UIF is lying at 21 billion rand. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yeah, so it's quite a serious position to be in. And the meetings with the PIC and in particular, it sounds like these have kind of happened very recently, but this is something that goes back long before. So am I correct then in saying that actually no progress has been made in the last financial year, now under audit, in terms of enabling the verification? You can't produce for the Auditor General a verified existence of these funds. In other words, you saying they're in distress, you haven't received financial statements from them through the PIC. You don't know what exactly the situation is, whether the money has been sent off to Dubai. Is that correct? Am I reading the situation correctly, that you really have no handle on these investments?
Mr. Leach, no, we have got the handle on whether these companies exist. Yes, they do exist. That has been confirmed. The meetings, I just want to backtrack a little bit, if you'll allow me. The meetings have not taken place recently. The meetings have taken place from the end of the audit, this 1920 annual report that we are talking about. We've had a substantial number of meetings during the course of the year. At the moment, we have received financials for some of these unlisted, but we've not received all the financials for all the unlisted. Thank you.
So I accept that the existence of the entity is known. Presumably, they're entities that are registered with the CIPC. But the real issue is whether you are confident that the investments with those entities still exist. Presumably there were investments in the form of cash advances of some sort or other, and that money is safe. You say some are in liquidation, so it seems that that's what we're referring to with write-offs. But as a whole portfolio, even the financial statements you've received, do they give you comfort that those that you think are safe are actually safe? In other words, putting aside the ones that are clearly in liquidation and are heading towards the write-off, what about the rest? There's 21 billion, you say. How confident are you about those that haven't yet reached the stage of public distress. In other words, in liquidation or in business rescue.
Those that we have, those that we have received the audited financials for, we are comfortable with. We have received management accounts of all these entities, but not all of them are clean. So we have concerns about them, and then clearly there are those that are in distress where we're going to see, those that are in liquidation where we're going to see that the fund will have to write up some of that, those funds. But those that we have received, the audited, we are comfortable with those. Some of the management accounts we're comfortable with, but not with all of them.
Thanks, Commissioner. Mr. Chairman, I'm sort of heading towards requesting that we call the PIC in, because am I right? Sorry, Commissioner, these are all investments through the PIC, am I correct?
That is correct, yes.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, the responsibility is on the UIF to ensure that the PIC gets a clear mandate for the investments and adheres to it. But at the same time, I'm wondering whether we need to ask the PIC to come and make a report on these investments and all investments for that matter, given the controversy and the malfeasance that surrounds the PIC as well. But I'll leave that for consideration, Mr. Chairman, by the committee. Mr. Chairman, let me move on to the problems that the AG encountered with benefit payments and provisions. I mean, these are not third party problems. In other words, it's not we can't get the information from the PIC or from the beneficiaries of the investments. These are basic accounting 101 issues that you account, make provisions for contingent liabilities and future liabilities. So this was an issue in last year's financial audit and probably before. I haven't looked back. So over the last year, have we now got absolute control and to ensure that the provision for future expenses and liabilities is now in place?
Yes, Chairperson, I think we have this matter was also a matter that we discussed at great length during the audit because of the interpretations that we all had. But at this moment, I'm comfortable that we have got this matter under control. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. So the 2021 audit will not be qualified on this basis. I look forward to seeing that. Because what this means is that the fund could well be insolvent if these liabilities are not accounted for properly, and we know that to try and mitigate the impact of COVID, there's been the 350 rand a month gratuity in order to try and assist desperate South Africans. So I really do hope that that's all under control. But moving on then to the whole question of the TERS in particular, Commissioner, we've been hearing for at least 6 months now about the fraud that's taken place there. Can you give us some indication of how many people have been charged and convicted for fraud in the TERS program?
Yes, Mr. Lees, if you'll just allow me to get to the detail of this matter. We have referred a number of 89 cases to the South African Police Services, which combines the Hawks and the Fusion Center. Of those, 14 employers have appeared in front of court, but the court cases are still being finalized. So the matters are in front of court. I have not received convictions as yet, because the cases are still being dealt with by our colleagues at the South African Police Service. We have received a number of COVID-19 fraud cases. I don't know if you want me to expand on the numbers.
Please do.
We've received 344 alleged fraudulent transactions through our fraud hotline and through the various different sources that we get these. Of these, 240 of these cases were finalized, and we have referred, as I said, now at the moment 156, the updated one, to our colleagues at South African Police Services, and there were 16 arrests, not 14. But the cases are still in front of court. Not all the cases that were referred were bona fide fraudulent cases. So this is the updated data that we have at the moment. In terms of internal fraud cases, that is still being investigated by the Special Investigations Unit. And I have not received a final report on those investigations. You know, if we refer to all the matters raised by the Auditor General during the audit of the phase one audit of the TASH payments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner, and well done on getting this moving, albeit incredibly slowly. Have there been any recoveries of funds paid out irregularly or fraudulently?
Yes, we have. We have had payments of repayments to the UIF of 2.2 billion rand, which was paid on a volunteer basis by employers. And you will recall that we went and announced that we also have the follow the money process, in which all employers that claimed TASH benefits would be audited by the during an auditing process. Now, this process has also started, and we have audited payments to the value of 16.7 billion rand thus far. And in the 16.7 billion rand auditing, we have identified 628 million rand that was incorrectly, fraudulently claimed and refunded to the UIF and or to the workers that were entitled to this. So we have had a substantial number or a substantial amount that has been refunded to the UIF. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Mr. Chairman, I must say it is encouraging to be getting reports of action and results rather than plans, which we so often hear is this is what we plan to do. But Commissioner, in terms of the recovered 2.7 billion voluntary recoveries, if they're voluntary recoveries, then that's kind of an admission of guilt, is it or isn't it? And my first question. And if it is, what are the consequences for those who have voluntarily refunded funds that they shouldn't have got?
Not all these repayments to the fund are because of wrongdoing by an employer. You will recall in the beginning of the TARS that the internal controls were found lacking, and that there were sometimes payments made which were duplicate payments, etc., to employers. And when employers then audited their own books, they realized that there was an overpayment made to them, and they refunded the money. For the employers that have defrauded the fund, all these employers, will face the law in terms of fraud and corruption charges. We will not let anyone go aside who has defrauded the fund, because in the end it's the money of the workers and the employers. So all of them, we are also at the process that if we find that someone has, when we confirm fraudulent activity by an employer, that we will put this person on the blacklist so that they cannot do business with the state. That's one of the steps that we will take as soon as it is confirmed. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. So that's in process, hasn't yet happened. And so we look forward to that happening fairly promptly, because profiting out of a crisis like COVID-19 simply, I mean, it's just immoral. It's so unacceptable as to almost require firing squads. So please, I think you have the full support of this committee to ensure that those employers are held accountable. Mr. Chairman, thank you for that. I now want to move on to something that I'm sure the Commissioner is going to be able to give us figures on, because it's something that we were aghast about when we visited the offices in Tshwane. So Commissioner, when we visited you in October 2020, and thank you for hosting us hospitably, we learned that there was a backlog of 440,000 emails at that point, and that you were able, or your people, your staff were able to handle a mere 680 emails per day. And so by simple arithmetic, we calculated that it would take you 2 years and 7 months just to clear the backlog without dealing with any new emails. Can you give us a report on how things have been improved since we were there in October last year?
Thank you. Yes, indeed, it has improved. We have, apart from the officials that you saw during that visit, also used the call center where 290 agents were to assist us in dealing with the backlog. Officials have also worked overtime in terms of getting rid of the backlog. It is a reality that at the moment we do have still have a backlog, but we've worked it down to 40,000. And the backlog in terms of the email specifically is because people submit multiple emails. So they don't get a response within a day or two, they respond another one and it gets counted to our total. But at the moment we have a backlog of 40,060, which we are working down. Thank you,
Commissioner. So that's great. So that's a reduction, tremendous reduction. If I were to send you an email, and let me tell you, you guys haven't responded to an email I sent more than a year ago, but put that aside. If I were to send you an email today, what would be a reasonable chance of getting a response?
Chair, I lost sound for a moment there, but I suspect the question...
Commissioner, I'm my apologies. I think my signal is not good, so forgive me, please, for that. And Minister, yeah, I my apologies to you too and the whole team. My question is, if I were to send an email through to UIF today, when could I reasonably expect a reply?
The turnaround time for email is seven working days, Mr. Lees. We are at the moment switching over to a new call center. So there might be a slight delay this week still, because we're finalizing the technology and putting everything in place. But this is the turnaround time. The expected turnaround time is 7 working days for response to an inquiry.
Commissioner, you better watch out, because I'm going to be sending an email today and I'll let you know how long it takes.
Please do. And I
hope that I don't get special treatment in the process. You talked about using your call center people for emails. The call center itself, when we were with you, and I know you'll say that many of them are the same people trying over and over to get through, but was averaging 30,000 incoming calls a day, and the call center was only able to deal with 3,000 a day. So there was kind of 27,000 not being dealt with, but yeah, I understand many of those would be duplicate calls. That situation today, given that were those the same call center people that you used to reduce the backlog on email?
No, sir. At the time when you visited the fund, we had we did not have a proper fully fledged call center. We had a small call center. I think you will recall there were 40 agents at that time. Then we added another 290 call center agents, and they were the ones that were dealing with this backlog, as well as with the calls coming in, as well as with the inquiries that we've had. And with it switch over now in terms of the call center to the new call center, which is a much more technologically advanced call center, giving much more options, self-help options. We have contracted 250 call center agents to deal with the calls that come in every day.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I must... I described the Compensation Commission as hell last week, and I think it wasn't a terrible exaggeration. I don't think I can do the same about UIF this week, but it still seems that a considerable amount of action is required in consequence management. So I look forward to another interaction in the not too distant future to assess the progress that's being made. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you very much, Honorable Lees. Right. Honorable Hadebe, let us hand over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Lees, that was quick.
I'm sorry, did I wake you up there, Honorable Hadebe?
Not at all. I've been listening attentively. Thank you so much, Honorable the Chairperson. Chair, let me start with the issues of the financial. 2018-19. The fund received qualified audit opinions with seven areas highlighted by the Auditor General. 2019-2020, again, it's a qualified audit opinion with 15 areas. Now that's 100% increase from the previous financial year. It seems as if instead of things improving, things are getting worse. The AG has highlighted that the fund does not have documented policies or process to obtain information from associates and joint ventures to ensure that they are recorded properly. Now, this brings to question the credibility and accuracy of your financial statement and the information submitted for auditing. There's really issues of concern in that aspect. Now, for two consecutive financial years, the auditors were unable to verify the accuracy, completeness, and validity of financial information submitted in relation to your associates and joint ventures, and the fund as it is prescribed and required by the law, including the fact that the accounting authority as prescribed in the PFMA ought to submit credible and accurate financial statement for auditing. How does this happen when you have an audit committee, internal audit committee, that your financial statements, the issue of credibility is questioned? Let us start with that first question. And we are told, Chair, as per the report of the Audit Committee, that issues raised by the Audit Committee and Internal Audit Unit are not considered. I'd like to take this opportunity, Chair, and give to the Audit Chair, but I heard from the Minister that there's someone from the Audit Committee. I'm not sure whether it's the Chair or what, but if it is a Chair, to get the sense from that Audit Committee, who received these reports and why didn't they act on the reports? How many issues were highlighted and were not acted upon? Can I take this first round, Chair, to give to the Audit Committee?
Thank you to you, Chair. Good morning, Chair, and morning, honourable members. Chair, just in response to the question posed, from an Audit Committee perspective, the member is correct. In terms of the financial statements that were then presented for 2019-20, specifically in terms of when those financials were put before us, we had specifically raised concerns around the unlisted investments. And maybe just to provide some context, in the 2019-20 financial year, the approach in terms of the unlisted investments was that the PIC had made commitments whereby they would produce the audited financial statements in some cases. However, commitments were made that credible management accounts would be provided. The fund, therefore, in the 2019-20 financial year, adopted a different approach whereby they had developed a methodology whereby they could basically use the management accounts and assess the credibility of the information. I will take you, in terms of the COVID year, we were supposed to then, the revised date for submission of financials was actually in July. However, when we got to July, the management team then requested to say, we're not where we're supposed to be in terms of these unlisted investments, and therefore, we will be taking an approach where we do not submit these financial statements on time. However, and we accept that there will be implications because there was no approval granted to submit late. And by default, in the, as the member correctly stated, there's an additional paragraph this year in the 1920 year, which speaks to non-compliance in terms of submission on time. However, the audit committee did question at the time to say, what's fundamentally going to change in 2 months' time if you were not able to then receive the information throughout the year and then apply this framework that you've now put in place? However, we were given assurance that commitments were made from the PIC perspective. And Chair, I also would like to then state, I was also part of one of the meetings, the board-to-board interactions, where this appeal was made to PIC to come to the party. Commitments were made, and unfortunately, those commitments were never abided to. Nevertheless, when we were then approaching the revised submission, the late submission 2 months later, which was at the end of September, unfortunately, those management accounts that were coming through were not of quality. And in addition to that, also the audited financials, in some instances, that commitment was not coming forth from the PIC. So management then, in terms of the 1920 financial year, adopted an approach whereby they sought a deviation from the GRAP standard, and basically instead of disclosing against GRAP 6 and 7, they chose GRAP 1, which is basically a deviation that says we do not have the credible information and we want to disclose based on the best available information at the time. We did question, because a service provider was utilized, and we did question as the audit committee, will this not also put us in a worse position whereby we could be potentially disclaimed? We were given the assurances that that will not be the case. And over and above that, that we basically applied all the provisions of GRAP. Unfortunately, when the audit commenced and so forth, and then eventually concluded with the deadline at the end of November, what then transpired is that the AG came back and said, we don't have an issue with regards to the fact that you want to use GRAP 1. However, you have not met all the conditions to apply GRAP 1 too, in that you have not demonstrated that you've actually taken action against PIC in terms of the non-submission of those financial statements or the management accounts to which you can then apply the framework to. Secondly, And I think this is also important. The AG constantly raises, and they raised it in this meeting previously as well, that the expectation is not to get audited financial statements. The management accounts will suffice, but you need to apply it to a framework. But they raise a very important point. If you look at the unlisted in investments, we are impairing these amounts as we move from year to year. So ultimately, we are impairing the amounts, and we can't basically account for those amounts. So that's basically, and then from an oversight perspective, to answer the member's question, when we of course receive these financials 2 months after the deadline and so forth and applied our minds, we accepted the management assurance related, but also took into account that there was no assurance from internal audits. And from our side, when we then recommended the financials, we did state our concerns. And in the audit committee report, those concerns are also highlighted. And of course, some of those concerns came to the fore. Specifically, while we make a comment to say that the audit committee resolutions are not being implemented, specifically with regards to the PIC matter, which the AG now says you are not able to demonstrate whether you implemented, you were not able to demonstrate if, according to the SLA, you've exhausted all of the options and taken action against PIC. The audit committee basically made a recommendation to management in terms of almost 2 years ago to take the SLA, put a checklist in place, and based on that checklist, monitor the PIC so that we can basically demonstrate that we're doing everything from our side to ensure that they are complying with the SLA. So that was one of the recommendations that has only been implemented now. As an example. Thank you.
Who in the management ought to have implemented this? So that I'm sure that person is here with us so that he can respond why it has taken 2 years and some of the issues raised have not yet been implemented to date. Who exactly in the management assist us have taken a different approach today, and the devil is in the details. So who in the management? And that person, when you refer to him, he must immediately respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. So, of course, as the Audit Committee, we direct all our recommendations to the Accounting Officer. So, in this case, it would be the Commissioner. But at the time, it would have been the Substantive Commissioner, not the Acting Commissioner. And then specifically with regard to members from the Executive Team, because they are also present in the Audit Committee, it will be the members from the investment team and the finance team. So it will be the CFO together supported by Christine, who's also responsible for investments.
They are all here.
I believe so, sir. Yes, that is correct, sir.
Can I get the response? Why not implementing recommendation? Why do you render these committees useless when they do their work and recommend certain things and things are not done? And also the acting commissioner will have to highlight what has she done to ensure that what was not done by the previous commissioner gets done. Can I start with those that are responsible as highlighted? Thank you. There seem to be silence in court.
Honourable Member, no. I think the CFO should respond to the issue of the implementation of this checklist as it resides with her. Thank you.
CFO, including the audit action plan that was not adequately resolved, please proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Hadeben. I will try and respond to the question. As a fund, we have tried to get information from the PIC. And the information that we've been getting, it was not credible. And the information we often get it very late, because these companies, majority of them are small companies, and don't keep...
Sorry. My apologies, Honorable Latif. I should have made the announcement earlier. If you're on the platform, please turn on your camera. Parliament is streaming this. Thanks.
Yes, so we have been live.
Name Beng Phil.
All right. Chair, can I continue?
Yes, it's just that yes, you may.
All right. Chair, in an effort to implement AG's recommendations, as the acting commissioner or rather the chairperson of the audit committee had indicated that we could not submit the financials as at the end of July, as was requested, and requested for an extension in an effort to try and resolve these issues. Because PIC had promised that we will be able to get the audited F or the credible accounts from these investing companies by before the end of September, but that did not happen. Hence, we find ourselves in the same challenge. Some were citing the issues around COVID, companies having having to close down and not being able to finalize their financial year. And that impacted to us directly. Several attempts were done to ensure that even the checklist gets completed, but what we were getting from these investing companies, it was not credible information. And as a fund, we can't go directly to these companies because our ownership, we own, you know, in terms of our shareholding, it's less than 20%, you know, in these companies. So we are minority shareholders and don't have much voice when it comes to the administration or the operations of those companies. Thank you, Chair.
Tell me, how do you interact and engage with these companies? How do you hold them accountable if you own 20%? So what is the modus operandi? So if they are disregarding all your requests and proposals, what then becomes the recourse from your side?
Yeah. Chair, that's the biggest challenge, and that's what makes AG not being happy with us, because we are found not to be holding PIC, because we invest through the PIC in these entities.
Yes.
And
who's supposed to hold the PIC accountable? I need a direct persons responsible for not executing their mandate. So in your response, direct me to the relevant official.
All right. Honorable Hadeb, what I could also indicate is that monthly meetings are held with the PIC, but I will allow Christine Foray, who is responsible for investments, to just give the members what normally happens in terms of monitoring these investee companies. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks. I think at some point I need to speak to the relevant persons, because now I'll be referred to the third or fourth person, and I do not want a situation where the next person will also refer me to another person. We cannot go around the circle. We need to know who should be held accountable for not implementing audit unit and audit committee recommendation. IPC, if they're at fault, the buck stops with someone who ought to ensure that things get happened. It can be a lost case. You've got 20% investment in there. So I don't think it is ideal for me to be going around the circle from one official to another.
Honorable Hadebe, when the current service level agreement with the PIC was signed, there was no provision made for penalty clauses. And that is one of the issues that I am working on. We are reviewing the SLA to include penalty clauses to make sure that we can hold the PIC more accountable than what we are holding them, or what we can do at the moment. The second thing is, if there's a breach of agreement from these third parties, SRIs, whatever, we instruct the PIC to take legal action so that we can recover or recoup our investment. insofar as the issue of the audit action plan, I agree with you that the audit action plan has not always been followed through. And this is a priority which we're working on at the moment to make sure that the quality of the audit action plan, you would have seen that the audit report also refers to that. I think also the audit committee report refers to that, so that we improve on the quality of the audit action plan and improve the controls thereof going forward. Thank you.
You see, the AG highlights the fact that your financial statements were not prepared in accordance with the prescribed financial reporting framework, and they were not supported with full documents for two consecutive financial years. Now, what it means in essence is that you only correct your material misstatement during audit processes. You are relying on audit processes to identify and correct material misstatements. Now, are you telling me that all these issues that makes your financial statement not to be credible are only attributed or contributed to PIC? There are issues in terms of material misstatement that relates to benefits in terms of payment, investment in associates, employee cost, cash flow statement. Now, all those cannot only be attributed to a PIC. Why are you relying on external audit process to identify material misstatement in your annual financial statement? Why are your annual financial statement not credible?
The bulk of the challenges with the financial statements of the UIF is that of our investments. If our source documents can't be verified, which we have heard is a challenge that we have at the moment, it's got a ripple effect to our valuations, as well as our impairments are also being affected. And if these are not complete, we can't continue to use that information to our financial statements. And if we look at all the numbers and the huge number of the unlisted investments in terms of GRAB 104, it leads to more findings. It becomes a very vicious, I don't want to call it a domino effect, but a snowball effect, in terms of if the basis is not right, all the other issues fall onto that. I agree with you, there are areas within the control of the UIF which can be corrected, and we are working to correct those. Amongst those, the benefit payments, which we have put additional controls in place. Thank you, sir.
So demonstrate to me what are the internal control measures that have you put in place to ensure that your annual financial statement are adequate, accurate, and complete and valid. So give me something tangible to demonstrate that indeed you have put measures, internal control measures in place, so that in the next audit cycle, we do not get the same report from Auditor General that your annual financial statement are not credible. Are the measures in place where issues are within your control?
Thank you. So we have enhanced our supply chain management. You will recall that there were quite a number of challenges around supply chain management. We've enhanced our supply chain management in terms of strengthening the processes there. We have included a probity process in supply chain management to ensure that we strengthen the supply chain. We have also improved on the management of our assets, which was a substantial issue in the previous report, or in this particular annual report. We have done a lot of work in terms of our bid processes, which were also challenging, including the probity, including legal services to review those. We have also improved on our risk management, which was a problem in terms of the previous audit finding. findings, and we have also improved on benefit payments and benefit claims in terms of enhancing our systems. I think this is one of the benefits of the COVID TERS, is that it taught us how to enhance our systems to make sure that we improve on the payment of benefits, that we do not have duplicate payments, etc.
Let's then proceed to expenditure management. The AG highlights that there were prepayments that were made before services were received. Advance payment were made not in line with the contractual agreement. Would you be so kind to identify to me which are those contracts that prepayment were made in contravention of Treasury regulations? Why advance payment were made in contravention of the contractual agreement? How many contracts are we talking about here? And what was the amount?
Okay, the payments that were made in this fashion was for the labor activation programs. The labor activation program agreement reads that the first tranche will be paid before the service is started, to enable these entities to set up the training environment, to set up all the logistics, etc., to be able to continue then with training of the beneficiaries of the UIF. So there's a tranche one payment was made, but that is in the contract. The challenge came that some of these entities or service providers were paid their tranche two payment at the end of tranche one. So after the first 3 months, they received a second payment instead of receiving it only after month six. And that is what was the gist of the finding in terms of the labor activation programs. And all the contracts for the labor activation programs were done in the same way. We have since amended the memorandum of understanding or agreement to explain thoroughly so that everyone is aware of what is when payments are to be made. It was around the labor activation programs awarding of contracts that this took place. Thank you.
The AG says that it's in contravention of National Treasury regulation. So how can such a contract be in place when it's in contravention with Treasury regulations?
Yeah, I agree with you, sir, and that is why currently we are busy with a full-scale investigation into the labor activation programs to determine exactly what is going on in terms of the payment of these contracts, because it is correct, it is wrong. We are busy.
The person who drafted the contract, was that person not aware of this regulation from National Treasury?
So I will not be able to answer that. I think it was a little bit...
Can the accounting authority respond? The DG in this case is the accounting authority. Am I correct?
Yes, you are correct.
Yes, as an accounting authority in terms of the PFMA, you are responsible to ensure that you prevent irregular expenditure from occurring. If you have failed to prevent, then reasonable steps ought to have been taken to discipline those who have permitted such irregular expenditure. So can you explain to me, in terms of these prepayments, which are in contravention of the National Treasury regulation?
Yes, Chair. The way the labor activation program was set up, it was set up in such a way that it will not follow the supply chain processes. It was set up in such a way that the UIF would go out and request for proposals, and then they will then the contract will be set up in such a way that as the commissioner has indicated, the advance
payment would be made because you have learners that must travel, and you have learners that, as part of coming to class, remember, we have to pay stipends. So when they go to, when they travel and all that, you the they should have, by then, they should have stipends. And that's the reason why the prepayments were, that's partly the reason why prepayments were made. So in doing that, UIF thought that they would, we were alleviating the challenge which young people were facing in terms of accessing the venue for training and all that. So that's how the contracts were drafted, and it makes sense at the time. Even our legal sections didn't say anything wrong with that because of the purpose of the labor activation program. So the as the acting commissioner has indicated, we are now working on the process where we will not do that because we've changed the way we do things. But remember, the focus was on training before. Now the focus is not on training. Now the focus is on placing young people in employment. So that's why we would now even request the hosting employer to indicate to us that indeed they will be hosting young people, and then they will then submit an invoice later on to say these young people are now in employment.
So when you deliberately choose not to follow supply chain prescripts, is there no provision that allows you to deviate? And has that not been utilized in this case? Why is it regarded as in contravention of national treasures? Don't you have within your supply chain management policy a provision for deviation? Because you
know,
when you started, you said this was set up in such a way that it won't follow supply chain policies.
Maybe it was the way I put it. There was a laid down process in as far as the labor activation was concerned. So it had to comply to the policy that was put in place to administer the program. So it is not to say it needed not to comply with
which procurement provision or prescript you relied on when executing this program. There has to be a reliance on certain provisions within your procurement policies. Otherwise, you can't just do as you please or as you deem or see it necessary at the time. You are governed by certain legislation in order for you to execute your mandate. In this regard, you had to rely on certain prescript within your legislation and your policies.
No, definitely. So definitely, Chairperson, we are guided by the prescripts. We are guided by our supply chain processes. But LEP, when LEP started it started as a pilot project, and this is what we've been trying to rectify all from when we picked up these things. That part of the pilot project did not follow the supply chain process. That's why I said when it was set up.
So tell me which process it followed. If it did not follow supply chain, which process it followed? I do not want to say it followed common sense. I want you to tell me. So this is the pilot, this is how we're going to implement it. We're going to use logic, we're going to use common sense. Is that the case? If not, then refer me to the other policy other than the supply chain policy that you opted not to follow.
So we did not opt.
Okay.
We did not opt not to follow this process. I mean, supply chain process. There was a document that was put together, which was indicating which was more like a terms of reference in terms of how LAP was going to operate, and it ran for some time using that framework, and the colleagues at UIF would attest to this. That after some time, the project program had to be put back into the supply chain process so that it complies with supply chain process. Because when it started, it was a pilot project which did not follow the supply chain process. It was following the framework that was put together to test whether this thing will indeed work. And that's why we've made the changes that we've made to the program to make sure that it complies with all the supply chain processes and also the National Treasury prescripts.
But my question, the framework, where did the framework derive its authority from? You can't have a framework outside and any agreed policies, legislation, and constitution for that matter. You derive your existence from somewhere.
No, I agree with you. It needed to be.
As an accounting authority, you derive your existence from your Unemployment Insurance Act. That's where you derive your existence as an accounting authority. This framework, when it was drafted, it was drawn out of what? Common sense?
No, it was not drawn out of the common sense. UIF has a responsibility to make sure that the
framework, please tell me, I'm expecting a direct answer. The framework was drafted from which authority, which legislative prescript gave rise to this framework?
That's where I'm going, Chair. UIF has a responsibility to assist to make sure that the people that they pay benefits to are brought back into the labor market. And that's why you'll see that part of what they do is the training of unemployed people, which the big chunk of that are those from the UIF beneficiaries. So that responsibility is derived from the legislation. The mandate that the UIF has. And that's why when you claim UIF benefit, you must come back and still indicate whether you're still unemployed or not. So that if you're unemployed, if you are employed, the fund does not continue to pay you benefits. So it was derived from that mandate. And at the time, the fund thought that by following the process that it followed, it was living up to the mandate that the legislation compels them to do.
It's clear that I'm not going to get a response on this matter. Let us move to your irregular expenditure. And over the past 2 years, 2018-19, your closing balance on your irregular expenditure was sitting at 107 million. 2019-20, your closing balance was sitting at 93 million. Now, AG indicates to us that there is no sufficient and appropriate evidence to suggest that disciplinary steps were taken against some of the officials who permitted irregular expenditure amounting to 86 million in prior year. Now, in this regard, there was a forensic investigation that was instituted and concluded in relation to the implementation of SEP. And there were sanctions and recommendations. Till to date, the AG indicates that those sanctions or recommendations were not implemented. Why has the forensic investigation instituted, concluded, recommendations and sanctions imposed accordingly, but not implemented? Who are these officials that were implicated in this forensic investigations? Why has action not been taken? And who is the responsible person to ensure that recommendation and actions are acted accordingly? Accounting authority.
Sure. I think this is a reference to the Accenture matter. And this matter, indeed, when it was investigated, there was a report that suggested that disciplinary action must be taken against this of the officials. I think one of the officials was the former CFO of the of the UIF, who is now the commissioner of a UIF compensation fund, Mr. Mafata, and the others. I don't remember the name, but we can provide the names. So basically, they were part of the bid adjudication committee. Now, and this relates to a matter where the Accenture, at some point, they were asked to provide, to provide some advice on how the systems could be developed, and in fact, they were asked to put together a business case. I think that's if I remember quite well. Now, the officials who were part of the PAC, when they were reviewing the process, trying to make a decision whether to approve or not to approve, they then saw that Accenture applied, right? And they then decided that they will then seek a legal advice as to whether Accenture was allowed to apply, or given the fact that they were working with UIF, they should have been excluded. So the legal opinion came back saying, there's nothing that that precludes Accenture from applying, just like any other service provider. And on the basis of that legal advice, they then went ahead with the process, and eventually Accenture was appointed as a preferred service provider. So that's where this thing came from. And then when the report came out, I then asked that, I then sent out the list of the areas that the report was saying the colleagues must be account for. Send it out to the colleagues, and we asked them, as it is the norm, before you start any disciplinary process. In fact, part of the disciplinary process is that you must give opportunity to whoever is accused to state his or her case. So that was done as part of the disciplinary process. And when the responses from the colleagues came, then the advice from the employee relations at the UIF at the time, I think together with their legal, after having looked at the responses, they then advised the accounting authority that we shouldn't go ahead with the disciplinary process because we didn't have grounds to do so. And after going through it, applying my mind on the advice,
I concurred with them because they acted not with any malice, and they went out and sought a legal advice, and the legal advice
accounting authority was a forensic investigation.
Yes.
With the recommendation of the forensic investigation. Auditor General said you have failed to act on the forensic investigation's recommendation and sanction. I don't want us to reopen the case. The investigation was...
No, as far as I'm concerned, I did not fail to act. I acted. I acted following the process. The outcome may not be as expected.
I'm saying that what were the recommendations from the forensic investigation?
The recommendation was that a disciplinary process must commence. There was no recommendation for a specific sanction. So that process had to follow a laid down a process which we duly complied with, and that's exactly what I did.
And you opted not to institute disciplinary proceedings?
Based on the facts that were put at my disposal.
Yet the forensic investigation recommended disciplinary hearings. You went outside the... Why did you institute the forensic investigation if you're not going to implement the recommendation? The recommendation, as you are putting it to me, is that it says institute disciplinary hearings.
It says institute a disciplinary process, right?
And
part of the disciplinary process, right, is to ask people, is to hear the other side, give them the opportunity to state their case, what happened, and that's exactly what we did. And on the basis of the responses, we then acted. I acted, in fact, the way I acted, because I was informed by the information that was on my that was at my disposal at the time.
So you're saying to me the forensic outcome did not say there was a prima facie case to be answered?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying the forensic investigation said we must start a process of a disciplinary process.
Based on what? I'm sure it says there is a prima facie case that something was, there were financial misconduct occurred.
The report was saying there was conflict of interest, in a sense that the Accenture should not have been considered, right? And then you have a legal opinion that says there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, because there's nothing that bars them from competing.
So over and above the forensic investigation, you went out for a legal opinion?
No, I did not. I did not. The legal opinion was there. The legal opinion was there.
The legal opinion was there even before you instituted the forensic investigation. So that forensic investigation took into account that legal opinion but arrived at the conclusion.
No, I agree with you.
I'm saying to you, that legal opinion was sought before you even instituted the forensic investigation. So when the forensic investigator completed their work, all matters were taken into consideration and they've arrived at a conclusion. When you implemented what you term as your responsibility, you still relied on what the investigator also took into account, and you took that only one part because they've got legal opinion. Therefore, the case ends from what they've submitted. There was no malice intent on their part. Don't you think the investigation, the forensic investigation, would have arrived at that conclusion if indeed there was no malice intent on their part?
I can't speak on behalf of the investigator, Chair, but what I did was to apply my mind on what was in front of me at the time. And that's why I insist that to say I did not start the disciplinary process, it's not
so
correct.
So what AG is saying is incorrect?
No, I disagree with AG, and I've disagreed with them on this point, that what constitutes a disciplinary process.
So I'm saying from where you are, what the AG is highlighted is incorrect.
Which one? Which says that there was no disciplinary process that took place? I disagree with them because and the AG can tell you we've been discussing the issue what constitutes consequence management and disciplinary, because once you start the disciplinary process, you can't, there are steps that you must not skip. And once you skip the step, then it becomes a subjected process. So
if I were to quote AG saying disciplinary hearings were not held for confirmed cases of financial misconduct.
They were not held because of the process that I outlined. We could not have had them because of the representation that were made by the officials who were part of the supply chain process.
So you agree that there was issues of financial misconduct?
It was what, sorry?
I'm saying you agree with the finding of AG that there were issues of confirmed financial misconduct and disciplinary hearings were not held. There were, it's confirmed, there's financial misconduct within the fund. Someone must be held accountable for the financial misconduct.
I don't think the outcome was. I mean, the outcome of that investigation was financial misconduct. It's just that I don't have it in front of me. But if it says so, I wouldn't disagree with it. But as far as my recollection is concerned,
as an accounting authority who acted on this matter, you should be privy. This is 86 million we're talking about. Financial misconduct. You need to be able, on top of your head, to recall this sequence. Moreover, when it is highlighted by the Auditor General and you had disagreement with the Auditor General, that information is at your disposal. Can you retrieve that information for us? Will you be able to be in the position to ask your subordinate to finish with that information?
Because
you are disputing what the Auditor General is saying, that there are confirmed cases of financial misconduct, officials are not held accountable.
Chair, I'm not disputing what AG is saying, right? All what I'm saying is that I could not and I did not see fit at the time that we should have a disciplinary hearing, as I indicated earlier on, that we had to follow a process which is part of the disciplinary process, and disciplinary hearing is a process that is right at the end of the other processes that you have followed.
Now, I think you have answered me. You're saying you did not see it fit to institute.
Given the advice that I was given, I applied my mind and I didn't see it fit at the time, yes.
The executive authority minister. Honorable the minister. Honorable the minister.
Yes, sir.
We have a situation where the AG says where there are cases of confirmed financial misconduct, disciplinary hearings are not instituted. The accounting authority is saying in this meeting it did not deem it fit to constitute such. As an executive authority, what is your take on this matter? Are you aware of this case of 86 million where a forensic investigation was conducted and concluded and the recommendation were given to the accounting authority and he did not see it fit to act on those? And this is included now in the Auditor General's finding, which contributes to your fund receiving qualified audit opinion. What is your take on the matter?
My take, Chairperson, is that if you're supposed to conduct a disciplinary process or a disciplinary action, there are a number of steps which have to be followed. We have to follow those steps because, unfortunately, our own law, when it comes to these issues, it's not just straightforward. As the DG has indicated, the principle of the alterim partem rule is very, very strong in whatever you are doing to hear the other side of what has happened as you are starting the process. What I also know, ideally some of the DC processes, as you engage them, you get disappointed because they do not give you what you might have wanted. But in this particular case, I would prefer to go back, get all the facts, analyze it, and write a report and come back to you. And if there were missteps, I'll be able to talk about that. But if I come to the same conclusion, I'll be able to indicate or reflect in that report which I will give. I would prefer to deal with this matter factually and go into the details of the matter.
What should be the time frame that gets given to you so that we expect a report as such?
I don't mind. 2 months maybe enough.
2 months. All right. There's a recommendation. The chair will summarize based on what has been highlighted. While I still have you, the report also indicates...
Just on that point, I'm going to interrupt. Honorable Mente wants to make an interjection before that other matter gets called. We'll come back to the way forward shortly. If we can just beg your indulgence momentarily.
No problem. No problem.
Honorable Mente. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Now, Chairperson, thank you very much. Apologies, Honorable Adebe, on your slot. But I wanted to take the minister on the PFMA where he says sometimes when he goes to some of the powers he have in order for him or his office to act on such transgressions, he doesn't get empowered. Refer to the PFMA on consequences and under Section 57 starts there for responsibilities, and then it goes all the way to consequences. And it empowers you that failure for the executive, I mean for the official, to do the right thing. In this case, he did not charge the people that he was told to charge. In fact, he was told that they have transgressed and they have mismanaged the funds by the AG. He did not see it fit at the time that he must charge them, even when the AG had said so. Earlier on, there was a gentleman who indicated on their own recommendations as an audit committee to the same management, and the same management did not take such advice. And therefore, Minister, the PFMA empowers you to charge him because he failed to carry out his duties. Thank you, Chair. Honorable the Minister.
The PFMA empowers me to charge, but before I charge, I must listen to the reasons why he handled the process in a particular way. That's what I'm going to do. And then on the basis of that, I am able then to determine what has happened, whether his version does in fact support the exit which he has taken or he has not taken. So at the end of the day, I must also hear his side of the stories. I must investigate this particular matter.
Honorable the Minister, are you aware that this matter relates to the previous financial year?
Yes, I'm aware. And I am aware.
The report also says, yes, okay, Honorable Mente.
Chair, Minister, you cannot say that you are going to now hear him out. This is a repeated finding. It's on repeat now. It was found an annual year, financial year before. It's being found for the second time now. That same finding is for the second time. It's a repeat. AG says you failed to carry out your duties on the previous audit report and your annual report. Now for the second time we're coming in, we still find the same things not being done. So what was his response of not doing it for that annual report that the AG is coming for the second time on the same finding? Thank you, Chair.
Yes, indeed. Someone ought to have asked the question, why is this finding still here? And an explanation given. And when you are satisfied with an explanation, you then agree or disagree. It's the previous finding. Hence, I'm saying, Minister, were you aware that this matter was raised previously?
Yes.
As an executive authority, the report says quarterly reports were not submitted to the executive authority as required by the Act. Now, are you aware of certain issues that ought to be brought to your attention and are not brought to your attention, including this one? Because if this matter was brought to their attention 2 years ago, you would have found it within yourself to get an understanding what transpired. Why is this matter still raised as a financial misconduct that is not acted upon? And as an executive authority, what do you do when you do not receive reports? AG say you don't receive quarterly reports.
President, it's not this particular issue. It's a number of issues which we are analyzing, and we have to be systematic in dealing with all these issues. By the way, these issues which we are talking about, we've not started dealing with them this year. We started dealing with these issues early last year, even before we had this chaos around the tariffs. We were already seated and dealing with this matter. And I want to say the issue of charging people has to be informed by the facts first, but also, and I want to emphasize, the Audi Alterim Patem rule, where you listen to all the sides, is very important before you charge, because in some instances, you rush into a process, you come back with nothing at the end of it, that you have not been able to charge, and then you regret why you did that. Allow us give us time for me to further investigate this matter. You might find that it's not even coming for the second time. It has been there for a number of years. Let's go deep, because I've said the issues of what has happened in the UIF and even in the compensation fund, like we discussed last year, are very deep and systemic issues. We won't hide anything. I will go back and find out exactly what has happened to this particular issue. That's what I'm requesting.
Chair, I see there's a hand of Honorable Dirk.
Yeah, I was about to call him in. Okay. Over to you, Abu Dirk.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, you see, Chairperson, the difficulty I'm having with the explanation from the accounting officer why he deemed it not fit to institute disciplinary actions. And then the minister is also now coming and along that line of why you cannot just charge people. Now, the difficulty I have with the explanation of the accounting officer is that there was a forensic investigation here. And it's not just an investigation, it's a forensic, which goes deep, which brings things to the fore, which brings substance and evidence to the fore that there must be disciplinary action to be instituted. So I can't understand now the minister saying, no, you still going to have to go deep. How deep can the minister and accounting officer dig? They cannot dig deeper than a forensic investigation. You see, once you institute forensic investigation, then there's a recommendation from the forensic investigation. You can't ignore it. You must act upon the recommendations of the investigation of the forensic investigation. And I have a problem with the explanation that's being forwarded by the accounting officer and by the minister on this one here. I just cannot see my way clear on this one here. Thank you, Chair. I'm done, Chairperson.
All right, let's get a response. Hold on. Minister, just one second. Colleagues, can I do this? Once the minister's done, can we get Honorable Hadebe to wrap up, and then colleagues, you will come in so that we don't interrupt the flow of the hearing. So, Minister, you can give us a response to that. Honorable Hadebe will round up, and then Honorable Mente, I see your hand, and then we'll take the other questions. Right, Minister, over to you.
Chairperson, I won't be able to give any other explanation except to say this is how I understand this process, as I've indicated. Once you have been given a recommendation to charge people, there are other processes we have to engage in. Like I've said, listening to the other side, that why have you not done 1, 2, 3? That's very important. However, and I'm saying there's nothing else, because I've said this repeatedly, all I can do, allow me to investigate and come back with a report. That's why I was saying, give me 2 months. I don't see any other way of doing it, or come and give an explanation where I must just lie.
Chair, can I proceed?
Please do.
Chair, you see, the challenge that I'm having is when the Auditor General says to us, the following measures were identified to have been not implemented to ensure that the environment is conducive for consequence management. So there are certain areas identified by the AG that were not implemented to ensure conducive environment for consequence management. One of those areas, failure to deal with allegations reported in prior years. No investigation to identify persons involved. no disciplinary hearing for confirmed cases. Now, this is happening for 24 months, and it's the reason for a conducive environment of consequence management not existing in the fund. 24 months down the line, nothing has been done to create a conducive environment for consequence management. Lack of proper record keeping to ensure complete, relevant, accurate information is accessible and available. 24 months down the line, that has not been happening. We do not have proper records to give relevant, complete, accurate, and credible information. Now, when we are conducting our oversight, we expect that these issues that we are highlighting has been brought to the attention of the accounting authority, of the executive authority, of the accounting officer. They will come before us to demonstrate steps taken to adequately address these issues. It is unfortunate to come to a conclusion where we will be told that time is still needed for the relevant authorities to determine what has been or was previously identified and it's constantly been identified, still no action taken. It gives one a sense, or one is forced to arrive at a particular conclusion, that indeed it's true that consequence management is not taken seriously in the fund. I'd like to pose a question, Chair, once again. Is this the only case where consequence management was not effected, yet it has been confirmed that indeed officials who were responsible for financial misconduct ought to be brought to book? Is this the only case that we are dealing with? Are there more cases of the similar nature? Accounting authority, can you please give us the sense and the comfort that indeed this is not a trend within the fund?
Sir, this is not the trend within the fund. I mean, there have been cases where consequence management was taken. So it's not the trend, sir.
Yet the AG is saying cases, not a case. Confirmed cases. Why would the AG use plural instead of singular? That cases, confirmed cases.
Sure, it may be that there are indeed cases that have not yet been finalized. They are in the process of going through the disciplinary process. It is not that there's blatant disregard for cases that have been finalized and there are no actions taken.
So
at least saying, as far as cases that have been brought to
so
my
you
attention.
Are saying your position as an accounting authority, you are in the same quagmire as us. At this point in time, you don't know about those cases that were highlighted in your annual financial statement, in your audit outcome. You did not bother to look into which are these cases that the AG is referring to. Who's responsible for actioning these cases? You have not bothered to ask those questions and to act upon the findings of the Auditor General. You are sitting here today not knowing what are the cases the Auditor General is referring to. You are not.
I do know that there are cases that have not been finalized, Chair. We have a list of all those cases that have not been finalized.
accounting authority, I'm talking about finalized cases. I know currently the cases that are in, under investigation, they amount into 8 million. Your irregular expenditure closing balance is sitting at 93 million. So there are still other cases. The ones that are under investigation and are ongoing, they amount to 8 million. There are others that have been confirmed and finalized. Are you aware of such, or there is no such a case as clearly outlined and indicated in your report? Is this the only case?
As far as I know, Chair, the case that has not been found, this is the only case that has not, there was an investigation done. It's not the only one. We have a couple of these cases that were brought to my attention by the acting commissioner, that the matter was finalized, but there was no action taken. And it was when we were following up on the implementation of the audit action plan as to what happened. So there are similar cases where the matter was finalized, and I think some of them they date back as far as 2007, if I'm correct. So there are those cases that have been finalized, and the manager's consent have not acted. But we're working on that to make sure that that is done, corrected.
How many cases are we talking about? AG talks about the root cause and is saying sanctions and recommendations of completed cases not investigated. I'm asking you as an accounting authority, how many cases have not been pursued, yet the investigation has been complete?
Yeah,
that should worry you as much as it worries us, that there is lack of consequence management in the fund.
No, it does worry me.
You should be able to have the exact figures. You should know these cases. Unless you have not interacted with those cases and find out why are the delays. You should
have
now spoken to responsible persons. This case dates back from 2017, 2015. Why have you not actioned? A response ought to have been provided to you. You knew that you are coming to appear before us, and you knew that we are privy to the Auditor General report that has damning findings of sanctions, recommendations of completed cases not being pursued. That is a public information. And you came before this hearing expecting to provide answers, not to defer answers or responses to a later day. Otherwise, it's a futile exercise us conducting the hearing, because what I'm asking you, it's not what you are discovering now. It's not new information. It's not a new discovery. What I'm asking you, you knew, as well as the AG knew, and it has been brought to your attention that warrants action from your side. I find it unacceptable to still defer me back as if you have not acted on those. These are damning findings which the AG says to us, as the committee, you need to follow up on these matters. The reason why we're calling you to appear before us, you are following up on these matters. So these are not new discoveries. With due respect, accounting authority, ours is to ensure that a conducive environment is created for consequence management. Currently, as things stand, AG is concerned. He is recommending to us to act on these cases to ensure that those that are charged with the responsibility of oversight execute their mandate. But when the accounting authority appeared before us, says, I don't have an accurate response on these cases, what it tells us is that you did not bother to follow up on these cases. It's only us who are bothered. Hence, we are asking to quantify these cases. From your side, nothing prompted action in dealing with these issues.
Honorable Hadjabe, I see the minister wants to offer a response. If the DG can just stand by. Imam Dolash, I've noted you.
Chair, Honorable Hadjabe says nothing was done for 24 months. And I thought that we're dealing with the 1920 financial year, whose report was released very late last year. It can't be 24 months unless I'm wrong. The secondly, what the DG...
Executive authority, there are also cases that dates back to 2018, 2019 that have not been action. Hence the issue of 24 months. My apologies to interject.
No, that's fine. I think the issue here is the year-on-year repeat findings and,
yes.
and escalation. Yes.
That's fine. What the DG is saying, he had begun a disciplinary process, but its legalities did not allow him to continue with that. That's what the DG is saying. He didn't say that, I didn't consider that. But its legalities did not allow him to continue. And I was saying, you must allow me to look into that and come back. I just wanted to further emphasize that. Because as he is faced with the issue, any report, he must take that issue and write up the charges based on what the respondents are saying on the issue which has been raised. As I've said, it's not just straightforward, but allow me to do that and come back. That's what I've requested. Thank you, Chairperson.
Indeed, Honorable Minister, I concur with you. But the subsequent question that I was asking is that are there similar cases that have been concluded in terms of the investigation and they were not acted upon?
Okay.
So I'm saying I'm no longer dealing with the 86 million because I'm saying the Auditor General report saying sanctions and recommendations of completed investigations. It's not an investigation or referring to a single case. It's many cases. So I was asking a question. How many of these cases are we dealing with here? What is the quantum in terms of monetary value? And who are officials responsible? We are told now the previous one of 86 million, which is water under the bridge. The person was promoted to becoming something else while the investigation suggested otherwise. But we are not there now. All I wanted to find out now, moving forward, is the extent to which these instances that are worrisome are happening within the fund. If it's two, if it's three, five, give us the sense so that we can get a feel whether or not there is indeed serious calls for us to expedite receiving reports from your side.
Yeah, we have 10 cases that are still outstanding and they have not been acted upon by the officials. So we're working through those cases. And I have spoken to the acting commissioner to find out why were these cases not finalized. So we will be acting on the those that have not finalized the case, but in essence, there are only 10 of those cases.
And the value for those cases, we know the first one was 86 million. Do you have a value for each case? Are we dealing with 2 million, dealing with billions? Are we dealing with rands or cents?
Some of them, Chair, they are in millions. For instance, we have one from it's a HCM software case where the amount involved was 4 million, and we also have cases where it's for instance 15,000 where we have officials that did not show up. When they were supposed to have, they did not show up at the hotel, they did not fly when they were supposed to have gone to some destination for work purposes. So we have those cases, and they range, the money is involved, arranged around those figures.
Well, thanks, Chair. Let me take this opportunity and give to other colleagues to interact. If time permits, I will continue, Chair.
All right. Thank you, Honorable Hateb. All right. Honorable Mente and Honorable Tolasha, you will be first off the bat.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to first start at the findings. If you look at the audit report of UIF and the reasons for its qualification, you'd see that there are areas where it occurred even 3 years before, the same problem. In particular, a problem of not charging people that are a reason for irregular expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I was hoping that when Honorable Hadebe asked how many of those cases, the DG would be able to say, at least out of what we are investigating, we have managed to deal with people under wasteful expenditure, because that one is money that's spent on vain. It's just spent in vain, and there is no justification whatsoever for it. Then there is irregular expenditure. AG says people spend money irregularly. We even picked this thing up when we went there in October. But again, that day, the minister and the officials, we were given a comfort that no, everything will be in order, everything will be looked into. However, when they presented their financials, the same issues came up again. So there is no comfort in knowing that for almost 36 months, not even 24 months, Honorable Adeb, if you look into the annual reports, I just paged the annual reports now from 3 years ago, the same findings appear and nothing is being done on them. So the justification that we are still looking into the legalities, you are setting a wrong precedent that everyone else will never be investigated. The next thing, the minister is going to be reshuffled from Labor to another one, and then another minister will be saying we're looking into the legalities. It's not acceptable. Within the 12-year period when the Auditor General makes a finding. He makes a finding for the department to act on it. But to come at another financial year, then the same finding is still not being dealt with. That's not acceptable. But how, what's acceptable though, is that in chapter 10, Minister, of the PFMA, it's clear what is a misconduct. It does not fly with me that no, there are cases where you cannot just charge people without checking what's happening. Fair enough, but you, it is not acceptable that for 24 months later, even 36 months later, you have never bothered to look into why there are people who commit the same transgression within the department and they are not charged. We are now in the second year of, let's take for instance the issue of the TERS, where people were paid money, even those that are dead, correctional services, even members that are working within the public service. Those people, you are still looking into them. You cannot give us a number that out of 100 identified even by the SIU, we have dealt with them. These people have been charged because the names are there. The people are there. So what is it that you are looking into? Why would an official in charge of those people who have authorized such payments through the system have not been dealt with? So the next financial year and its audit findings, they are going to bring back the very same thing simply because you're looking into the legalities. Yes, it's acceptable to look into the legalities on your first year, but it cannot be the legalities on the second year again. It's just a laissez-faire approach to say, let's explain the legalities and the fact that we cannot simply because the law must take its course. Which law? Charge people. Chapter 10 of the PFMA under Section 81 tells you what is a transgression of an accounting authority. What is it that you have to do? It cannot be acceptable today. But the last point I want to make, Chair, is that when the audit committee makes recommendations, that one is very troublesome. Make recommendations and come to us to say those recommendations were not taken into account. And there's a portfolio committee where these things were supposed to have been reported to. I want to hear from the minister, what is he going to do about the officials? Now today he says he's still looking into the legalities. There were recommendations and advices given to the same officials by their own audit committee to say this is not right, that is not right, yet it was still not acted upon. What are you going to do about that? Because there is your evidence. Thank you, Chair.
All right, let's get a response to that.
Yes. What I'm going to do is what I've already requested. Give me that 2 months, look into the merits and the demerits, why people were not charged. And if they were supposed to be charged, then I will come with a plan of action and a report. But what I will not be able to do is to come to the portfolio committee and say, tomorrow I'm charging, without having all the facts. So I will go do my homework, do the investigation of all these cases, how far have they been taken, and then come back. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Mente, are you done? Right, Mam Tolasha.
Good day, Honorable Chairperson, colleagues, Minister and his team. Although Honorable Chair, Honorable Mente covered me, but I am now very worried with the last statement from the Minister of requesting to be allowed to go and be given 2 months for him to go and investigate. I'm not sure what is this now going to be investigated in the 2 months period, when the department and the minister could not attend to very clear matters and the very clear resolutions and advices from the AG. I'm really not so comfortable because the minister did not respond on the forensic investigation. It did not act on very clear directives and advices from the AG for the last financial year, more than once. Now we request 2 months. I think we must proceed, Chair, to conclude and resolve on these matters. I'm very sorry. I really want to trust the minister. However, I am not sure because the other thing, the area that he's now bringing into our attention is the fact that minister and his team did not in fact read the AG's report. It's like now we're coming up with a new stories or new reports, and as such, they need to go and reconsider, find more facts for him to act. Of which that alone, for me, is a huge problem. Just a huge problem. With this fund, being on the limelight in a very negative way during COVID-19 pandemic in particular, the responses that the minister and the DG is giving are really not giving not a hope to the people who are still awaiting to benefit out of this, and making us to confirm why corruption is as high as it is in the fund. No one is showing any interest to stop this or to show people that are taxpayers who are supposed to benefit, that in fact there is a department that can be their only hope. I'm worried the minister, in when he closes, he must really take us into confidence, Jefferson, because this is public money. It cannot be between him and the DG talking between each other and then start to convince each other and not convincing and create an impression that that's where it ends. It is very, very serious, Chair. In fact, I really would want to go back to this suggestion I made. Whether the President of the Republic, as a champion of fighting corruption, does not have an interest to know more about the minister's performance in this area, Chair, where departments and entities thus embark on wasteful and fruitless expenditure consistently, and nothing is being done, even when there are audit committees that sit and wait money being paid, but still not doing anything, let alone the fact that even the AG comes in later and still finds all the problems and no one is interested to do anything about them. I wonder, does he think that the president, will he be able to fight the corruption? And will the South Africans take him seriously, Honorable Minister, when he says that on the national television? When the South Africans are listening to what the minister and the DG has been saying, insofar as their accounting responsibility is concerned. I'm losing hope, Jefferson, I don't want to lie. And I really would want to, as a committee, to take this matter up, to say something must be done. If the minister cannot act to their DGs, then the president must act to his ministers. Because we are not investigating, there's information available before us. And us as a committee, we are the last group to receive all this. And we realize that nothing has been done about it for years, Chair. So I think, Chair, your office must find a way to really now go and get to hear from the president, because we asking questions and you are getting nowhere. And it seems like this thing is going to happen even in the next financial year. We are now at the beginning of the 2021-22. I wonder how far are we going in avoiding this. But with the story we are getting, we are not getting anywhere anytime soon, Chair. Thank you.
Chairperson?
Let's get a response to that. But it was more of a statement, which is for our own internal observation.
Yes, hence I wanted to come in.
Would consider that. Right, let me just hold you, Honorable Hadebe. I think there are other colleagues who are wanting to just stand by. All right, Honorable Somio, we have not heard from you this morning. Babu Somio, over to you.
It's covered.
I got you.
Well, in appreciation of the line of questions and the actual depth of matters which we are dealing with, we have declared that this year our focal point is going to be on consequence management. I would put up some kind of a finger to the DG in as far as his role in the fund is concerned, that asking these questions, we require to have firm action taken, because here there is money involved. And when there is money involved, there must be some form of accountability in relation to actions visibly taken on matters that relate to disciplinary processes. And firmly to the points raised by Honorable Hadebe, I would urge the minister, rather than appealing to us for a 2 month period, just urge him to bring the timeline forward a bit. I don't know whether he would have difficulty in bringing that timeline to a 1 year period. I'm looking into the fact that, Honorable Minister, the audit year for 2020-21 is unfolding. Your team ought to finalize financials for submission by end of July. And while that process is unfolding, we need to wind up on the current audit results, so that they should not leap into the oncoming audit process. One would have loved to see what Honorable Hadebe has indicated and more stated, that there might be a number of these kinds of cases which would need your attention, both your attention and the DG's attention, in as far as disciplinary processes are concerned, and therefore would need a form of a report on what has happened and what is going to be done on those matters, so that it should not be a matter of folding those matters off without proper action being taken. So our line of question is a line which seeks to instill a sense of urgency to see to it that the authority and the executive act together to deter these kinds of unwarranted misactions in as far as the fund is concerned. in appreciation your commitment to get back to us. I would really urge you, rather than coming back to us in two months, that you speed that process so that we can have time to deal with these matters unhindered with the unfolding process going forward. And not only to say investigatively, this is what has been done. What are you intending to do on those matters specifically? Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
All right, colleagues, are there any other hands?
Hadebe.
All right, I was just checking the other colleagues before you, Honorable, but I think if I check. All right, Honorable Hadebe, over to you.
Well, thanks, Chair. Perhaps, Chair, I should indicate to the accounting authority and the executive authority that as a science student, Chair, we were schooled that in terms of Newton's third law of motion, that for every action, there is an equal but opposite reaction. Perhaps that is why we are so adamant that where there's financial misconduct, consequence management ought to be effected as such. I'm raising this, Chair, because if you look at Section 51 of the PFMA, like I indicated earlier on, an accounting authority must take effective and appropriate steps to prevent irregular expenditure. And if you fail to prevent irregular expenditure, again, as an accounting authority, you take appropriate and effective steps to discipline officials that permitted irregular expenditure. Now, Chair, when you look into the root cause of these irregular appointments, just give me a second, Chair. My apologies, Chair. There was a disturbing noise outside. I had to close the door. When you look into the root cause, Chair, there are irregular appointments of service providers. And I'd like to, without running a risk of receiving the same response, there are irregular appointments of service providers. We are interested in knowing. We don't want to go back that much. For three financial years, how many irregular appointments in relation to service providers? Two, there were variation of contracts that exceeded 15% of the original contract value. How many are affected? Third one, there were payment in excess of the original contract value. How many contracts that were affected by this maladministration, financial misconduct? Four, there were service providers that rendered services beyond their contract period. Now, these are all the root causes for irregular expenditure. And these root causes are not only root causes of the financial year under review. They were reflected in prior years. One assumes that the historic data of these irregular expenditures have been dealt with. I am now requesting from the accounting authority to tell us the extent of irregular appointment of service providers. How many service providers were appointed irregularly? Variation of contract that exceeds 15%. How many and how much? Payment in excess of agreed and approved contract value. services rendered beyond the contract period. Now, this means that people continue to deliver services when they don't have contract with the fund, and they are getting paid without any valid contract. Can I get the responses to those questions? Thank you so much, Honorable Chair.
Let's get responses to that.
Thank you, Chair. We have a transaction for systems application products, which is SAP, which is an amount that was paid that exceeded the approval deviation. And that's the date of the incident is 2017. Then you have a company called 9IT, which also exceeded the original value with 15%.
Can you also tell us the money that was paid out so that we get the value?
Okay. So you have the amount paid, for instance, SEP, it was 433 million. And then you have the non-IT, which is just over 2 million. And you have data centric, which is 122. You have Bambanani pest control, which is 80,000. And then you have master hygiene, which is 35,000. And then you have just look at the other question. I did mention a data centric, which is 122 thousand, and then you have Hunadi and Munare trading, which is 57,000. Those are the ones that exceeded the value of the initial contract, which is they exceeded by 15%. And then the other ones are a payment to, for instance, the point I raised earlier on where people do not pitch up. At the hotels, you have, for instance, Cara Heritage, which was payment without services, which is 237,000. You have the HCM software, which was paid and there was no full utilization of the system. And then you have the SEP, SEP license support, and the amount involved there is 21 million. And the reason is that there's no usage of the SEP license. And then you have an again SEP license, which is 53 million. And then the next one again is SEP license support, which is 48. And then you have Bedwood Hotel, smaller numbers of officials attended than quotation requested. And then you have a no-show to hotels and five-star officials.
How much the no-show and the hotel?
Yes, the no-show and hotel is 15,000. And the Bedwood Hotel was 72, sorry, I didn't mention the figure, was 72,000.
So all these issues, they still require investigation?
Yes, a number of them, they still require investigation, but some of them have been concluded. For instance, the Vegas Park Hotel, where payment the payment without services was issued, the action taken there to those three officials involved, where the written warning was issued to the implicated officials. And for instance, the Kara Heritage as well, there was action taken, written warning was issued to the implicated official. And the on the HCM, FEP, these are still under investigation. So that's where we are, sir. And on the, for instance, the master hygiene, the written warning was to be issued to the assistant director. And then the rest of these chair are what I said I was following them up, because the investigation was concluded and action was to be taken, but there was no action taken at the time when we sent the report to SCOPA, and that's what we were following up. Thanks, Chair.
So I book a hotel, you pay money, I don't pitch, you just give me a return warning. No need to recover the money. I'm not sure whether it's only me that find it difficult to accept that as appropriate consequence management for someone who decides not to pitch and the fund would incur cost and a return warning will be issued. You will have to respond earlier on. I'm not sure, perhaps I'm expecting too much or I'm insensitive to certain issues. I want to also get an understanding in terms of your supply chain management policy that was not reviewed and updated for the last 2 years. And also the issue of poor contract management. What have you done to change the status quo? AG says there is poor contract management within the fund. The supply chain management policy has not been reviewed for the past 2 years. Bid processes not always fair, equitable, transparent, and cost effective and competitive. I want to get a sense whether you are doing something to change the status quo. Monthly reconciliation not conducted to firms to confirm the validity and accuracy of completeness of the third party payment. Why is that a case? Why are you not conducting monthly reconciliation? Those are the few questions. And if I still have time, Chair, I will come. But for now, can I get the responses to those questions? Starting with the warning for people who are in the hotel.
Chair, the disciplinary processes are handled by employee relations, and based on the seriousness of the transgression, I suppose that the chairperson of the disciplinary process they look at with the mitigating reports that they get from the official who has transgressed any rule, they then arrive at a sanction. Now, it may not be a sanction that the department were in favor of. And one of the things that I got to learn when I became a DG is that you can't change the sanction. You can't disagree with the chairperson of the hearing unless the only way that you can do is to take the matter to labor court. Now, that's the only avenue that one has. So a sanction may seem to be very light, and we're not happy with it. And I mean, I'm not happy with somebody who's given that kind of a sanction. But what we do, what I do know is that we recover the monies for the no-shows. The finance division signs an agreement with the officials to pay the money back. So all these no-shows, no-cares and all that, we recover the money. On the policies on supply chain that have not been reviewed over the last 2 years, this is I agree, something that should have happened, and we're now taking steps to make sure that all policies are reviewed on an annual basis, and including the issue on supply chain, the issue on contract management. It's something that has bedeviled the fund for some time now, and we are strengthening the supply chain policies. We're making sure that on a regular basis, all the existing projects that we have in the department, the line function managers do check as to when the contracts are expiring. And that's the work that the Office of the CFO does, because that's where the contract management competency resides. So that work is being done on a regular basis. We have again embarked on a process where we want to make sure that we clean up all these AG findings. We embarked on a process of clean audit, and that includes identifying not only the findings but addressing the root causes of all the AG findings. And that is why we looking at even improving the systems that we have at UIF to make sure that there's proper record keeping. When information is required, the information is there. And if it's required by AG or it's required by ourselves, we could be able to retrieve it electronically, not rely on the manual, filed information. So those are the interventions that we are making, and the acting commissioner is working, and myself and the team there are working tirelessly to make sure that all these areas that have been addressed by AG are given the attention that they deserve. Thank you, Chair.
No, the monthly reconciliation?
Chair, monthly reconciliations are done. The only problem that you find is that the quality of those reconciliations is not up to standard. And secondly, we have a unique situation where we have people, some of the funds employees that are in provinces. And it has proven to be very difficult to, because of lack of competencies in that area from the provinces, to do the monthly reconciliation. And we have since worked with provinces to make sure that they have the necessary competencies and the requisite skills to do monthly reconciliation. And it's not up to where we want it to be, but at least we are moving towards ensuring that everything is done according to the PFNA and and the proper accounting standards.
You have vacancy rate of 7.1%, and that has also resulted in the under expenditure in 2019-2020 financial year. Have you addressed the vacancy rate? Is it acceptable? Is it according to the norm that you would have 7.1 vacancy rate? How does it negatively impacting other than the under expenditure in the 2019-2020 financial year?
No, we don't derive any joy from having the kind of vacancies that we have. And we're impressing upon the colleagues to fill those critical vacancies. Because even though we're within the public service norm, if you have a vacancy, you want to make sure that it is filled, because there's a gap that is not that is created by any vacancy. So, and the contributing factor for our serving is vacancies. Is that in the last two years, we've added a substantial number of positions in the unemployment insurance fund structure, and mainly to cater for client service officials in provinces, client service officials that are dedicated to do unemployment insurance fund work. So those are that's what contributed. I think we created just over 238 posts. That all those posts are at provinces. So because we wanted to make sure that we UIF has got their own client service officials. In the past, you'd have one client service officer performing functions for UIF compensation fund, public employment services, and inspection enforcement services. So we are on a regular basis getting reports in terms of where we are with the filling of vacancies. But it becomes a moving target, because we mostly promote people internally, and it creates a new vacancy internally. And I do admit, though, Chair, that in the public service, we take a long time to fill vacancies because of the fact that you have about 4 to 6 months to be able to fill a post. And we're trying to change that standard for the department and to make sure that we fill posts as and when they become vacant.
Do you have the age analysis of your vacant post? Turnaround time, acceptable turnaround time to fill any vacancies, 3 months in South Africa. So within your fund, what's the age analysis? How long have some of these posts been vacant for? Do you have instances where, and are these funded posts?
These are funded posts, Chair. So you have instances where posts are vacant for 6 months and more, and especially in the last financial year, given the fact that there was COVID. But I don't want to use that as an excuse, because even previously we had similar cases where the age of the vacancy would be beyond 6 months. So roughly, it takes about an average. It takes about 3 to 4 months to fill a vacancy in the unemployment insurance fund.
Honorable Chair, that's my story, and I stick to it. Thank you. Thank you so much, Accounting Authority, for your cooperation. Where we might sound it a bit harsh, bear with us. Ours is to ensure that we conduct our oversight and have the outcomes of your audit outcome. We don't invent these things or create them. We just...
All right, no. Well, Honorable Hatshepsut, no problem. No, we are lab. Right, Honorable Dex, you had your hand up.
Yes. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think just in conclusion, yeah, I think we need to point out here, Chair, that with ESCOPA, we did not receive satisfactory answers today from the accounting authority. We could have, as other members of the committee, continued interrogating further, but I just realized it was not going to serve any purpose because I'm extremely unhappy about the answers that we have received today. And I think that goes for everybody in SCOPA today. So I want to appeal to the executive authority because there's a mess there. There's a mess. Simply, there's a big mess. And we must admit it, there's a mess. So I want to appeal to the executive authority, to the minister, that the minister will have to intervene here. Because these officials of the minister, they are failing. And it's going to be a bad it's going to end up being a reflection on you, minister. And that is the reason why Honorable Tolasha then raised the issue about the minister and performance. The president must, does president look at the performance of the minister? But I don't think it would be correct for us to blame the minister for what is happening here. Because the minister relies on the officials to run the department. So I don't think it would be fair also to blame the minister. But what we can ask the minister, because of the mess that are taking place there, that the minister must intervene. And as Commissioner Honorable Somyo said, the minister must try and report, bring the time a bit quick forward in a month's time, report back to us, not in the 2 months time. But at this stage, we will not blame the minister for what is happening there. But there's a mess, and the minister must deal with the officials in the department for what is going on currently there. And the minister must also understand us as the ANC component of SCOPA. We hold, because where the minister comes from the Communist Party, we hold you to a higher level, a higher standard because of being a communist. We look at you at that, we expect much higher standard from you as a communist minister. And when we find a department like this here, the officials are doing all these things, the minister is not on minister. Do you know what was going to happen if you were a minister in China and this is happening in the Communist Republic of China? Officials behave in this kind of manner. We can't have this minister. And Honorable Tolasha is correct when she says people have been watching this live stream on TV. And when they see the responses from the accounting authority, when Honorable Peggy was leading the questioning, I think the public out there, I don't know what impression they have about the UIF after they have heard these responses from the accounting authority. It's not good, minister. And minister, we appeal to you that you intervene, minister. Our hope lies now with you that you will intervene and correct these wrongs in the department there. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right. No, colleagues, thank you very much. Let's do this. Quite clearly, minister, as you can hear, the responses raise more questions than answers. It seems as if you're just digging yourselves deeper into this hole, and it's a vicious cycle. The audit outcomes are not good, but there is movement in certain areas. And of course, we want to tie this down properly. So I'm going to suggest, colleagues, that because the report was only tabled to Parliament last week by the UIF, Minister, let's give you 30 days to meet with the officials and of the department and the UIF and to present to us at that point an audit response plan to each of the issues that the AG would have raised, and then take it as an ongoing work in progress. So that will help. Then there's the suggestion on our part that we meet with the PIC on the issues of the investments. We will find time with the department and the entity and the PIC to come in and deal with that particular matter in the coming days. Then, Minister, there's the blacklisting which needs to happen of these companies, amongst others. So let us give you, I think, colleagues, let's give the department the benefit of the doubt on this matter. The minister has asked for 2 months, so he's asked for 60 days. Let's grant that and but subject to monthly reports. So we will receive the first report in 30 days as an indication of the work in progress, because amongst others, National Treasury has to be involved in this matter of this blacklisting and SARS and so on. So let us do that. So, and then Minister, last week when we met with the issues of the compensation fund, we made the determination that a performance assessment of the DG and the commission, of course, of the compensation. I would suggest that that performance assessment be all encompassing and all inclusive, including but not limited to compensation fund and the UIF, because the DG is the accounting authority. Then Mamtolashe raises a fundamental point insofar as the performance agreements between the president and the ministers. I think Mamtolashe, because you've been raising this issue persistently and I don't think we've taken it up. Let's do this. Let us get the presidency to come and speak to us about these performance agreements, particularly around the problematic areas and problematic departments and entities. So public enterprises, amongst others, employment and labor, so that we can have a yardstick measure as to how far the executive is taking the seriousness of these matters. So let us get that issue. We will schedule it. I think it's important, because it is integral to the oversight that we are doing. We'll work out the modalities, whether it's a briefing by the presidency or leader of government, business or his office or whoever, but let's get that. Because you look at public enterprises, there's just an implosion. The whole thing is collapsing, you know, and here too. What is the turnaround time? There's other entities and other departments as well. So I think let's take up the issue that you raise with that seriousness that it deserves. And then Minister, say to you, so of course, in the first instance, you have to get the audit plan, the response plan in 30 days to us on the issues that the AG has raised. I would imagine it's something that should be developed and is a work in progress. And then you come back to us on all those issues on a month to month. It will give you 2 months in the first instance and assess at that point and see how it goes. And then we'll schedule the PIC on those matters that require the PIC. And then a report also, Minister, in 30 days as well on the update on the disciplinary processes which are in play, at play, including the issues around the commissioner who's suspended. Of course, that's why you have an acting commissioner. So let us round all those matters up, and then colleagues, we will tie it down on a concrete report on the UIF in 60 days time when all these submissions have been done. I would imagine, colleagues, that is practical and is something that is workable under the circumstances. And of course, the minister is aware that we want that performance assessment of the DG in 30 days time as well. So colleagues, I hope that is a functional and concrete roadmap on these matters. The other issues will be dealt with by the portfolio committee, I would imagine. Right? Colleagues, are we in agreement with that?
Yeah, vum, Makosi. Yeah, vum.
Long live the chair.
Ben Lone Linde, the mamba day made. Okay, Minister, let us hand over to you for your concluding remarks, and then we will bring the hearing to a conclusion.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson and members. I do have a performance agreement with the president, which focuses, amongst others, on turning around the two institutions. And I think that can be made available, and maybe the presidency can be able to talk to that, or I can be able to talk to that, but that will be made available. The DG's performance agreement, it's mirrored on what is there between the minister and the president. But of course, it adds other issues which are expected from the accounting officer that can be made available. Chairperson, I must reiterate and to the members that I think given what is being ventilated here, I have made commitments to go back, relook at the matters raised, and that's what I've been asking for. Maybe as you have suggested, we have to, on others, shorten the time frames. There's no objection, there's no disagreement on that. I will respect the time frames which you have suggested. But Chairperson and members, I must reiterate that the disciplinary processes or process was established. However, I think where there's no agreement with the AGSA and where the scope is very critical, it's with the outcome of the DC processes. And but I don't want to say there was no action. There was action. It might not be enough as expected. And I want to assure you and the public that it's not a free for all in the UIF. We have managed to pay millions of workers. But of course, there might have been cracks which we have been dealing with. And as you have already said, members, coming from long ago. And there are many people suspended and charged in the UIF. That's one example. In the labor activation program, those who are heading there, both the chief director and the director of that program are on suspension. I'm just mentioning the two over and above the others, the officials that have been talking about. So there is firm action and visible action in relation to those DC processes. But where the members are not satisfied, they feel they are cracks, we will go back. You know that currently in the UIF we're an acting commissioner because I have acted. And the DG has also acted on the other officials. Maybe it's for another day. I thought that this copper was going to ask, I introduced both the CFO and the COO today. I thought there would be a question as to how far those processes, the people are back. But there are cases that are also being investigated as we speak. And we will deal with what colleagues have fallen into cracks. But I must also indicate that unfortunately on some of the cases in the investigation, and we accept that, the UIF has been overstretched. Some of these cases do not take the time you expect they are supposed to take. But that work is continuing. And we are going to take all these recommendations about the audit response plan, the issue of the CIC, which you would also initiate. And I've said at the beginning, Chairperson, these engagements where you hold us to account together with the officials as ministers and as the executive, sometimes they are a bit uncomfortable, sometimes, but they are necessary because they help us to move forward. They are very positive contradictions, positive contradictions, Comrade Dex. Now, China deals with those who are involved in corruption. Stanley, of course. That's where I allow it to rest, Chairperson. We will be able to meet those time frames, and we will report regularly. and we'll continue engaging the AG on some of the issues. Thank you.
No, don't worry, Minister. Where we did not ask you is because generally we don't praise fish for swimming. When you've done what you must do, rest assured that we note it and go past. So it's not without having seen it. It's precisely because that's all we expect, right? Minister, let's welcome that, your conclusion. I think it works. Colleagues, you will recall that, before I'll just close, I just want to say you'll recall last week, we were supposed to have met with CETA and we scheduled for tomorrow, but the department will be meeting with the portfolio committee tomorrow in the morning. And so our meeting is now the graveyard session. So there'll be no meeting in the morning, but we will start at 6 with CETA and the Department of Communications and Digital Technologies on that hearing, which did not proceed last week. So the lead members will be in your hands tomorrow. Let me take this opportunity to thank you, colleagues, to thank our very able and capable team, our support staff, which always does good work. Minister, to you, the Deputy Minister, DG, Acting Commissioner, and all the officials of the department and the entity, and thank you very much for appearing this morning, notwithstanding the fact that we remain fundamentally concerned about the responses. We hope the roadmap is going to land us at a point where the institution turns around and we will hold you to the timeline that we have agreed upon. As always, you, SIU and AG, thank you very much for always being in attendance and for the guidance that you give. I know most of the time it's behind the scenes, but we are because you are. So colleagues, thank you very much, and budget votes will continue this afternoon. So Minister, please ensure that we get the compensation fund submissions on the 21st of June, and then to receive the UIF related submissions on the 29th of June, if I am not mistaken. Yes, on the 29th of June, we will receive the UIF submissions and then we will take it from there. Colleagues, we have applied for special permission to meet during recess, so I'm sure we'll have one meeting per week to discuss all these things. Yes.
So we say the political work.
Siyasebenza, and that look is political work. Umsebenzi wabantu. Minister, we will shorten your deadlines if you continue on this road, so we can do your work within the recess period. So it's up to you. Right, colleagues, have yourselves a good day. We'll meet tomorrow evening when we meet with CETA and the Department of Communications and Digital Technologies. On that note, the meeting stands adjourned.